clean comedy. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 183.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, 'cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you on Tuesday, December 29th, 2020. 2020 is almost over, ladies and gentlemen. 2021 is creeping up on us. It is literally days away. By days, I mean like 3 days away. We're almost there. We've almost made it out of 2020. And I hope you guys are excited. I'm excited. I'm excited for what 2021 has to bring. I've got some great things coming up on the podcast in 2021, and I'm going to share some of those things here with you in just a little bit. Before we do that, though, I should let you know who's on the show today. Today, my guest is Dennis Tooley, a fantastic comedian and the co-owner of Gunny's Comedy Club. I met Dennis out at the World Series of Comedy. He was one of the judges for the main event. We hit it off pretty well, and we had a great conversation on the podcast. I liked him when I met him, and I wanted to have him on the podcast, and we made it happen. We talked a lot about clean comedy because that is something that his comedy club specializes in. They primarily just book clean comedy. So that was what we talked about, among many other things. So that's what's going to be coming up on the show. Before we get to that, though, let's handle some business. First thing, like I said, I have some news coming up for 2021. One of the things that I can share with you now is that as of January 1st, 2021, the Art of Bombing podcast will be part of the Dead and Mellow podcast network. Dead and Mellow is a comedy label. They were doing comedy albums, and they are expanding into the podcast world, and we will be joining their network. So that's something cool that's coming up in 2021. I've got some great guests booked and lined up. I haven't recorded yet, so until I record, I can't announce who is going to be on the show because I don't want to jinx it for myself. So once they're recorded, though, I'll share away. You know I will. All right, next thing we're going to talk about is the contest. There was a contest that I put up on the Facebook page. If you shared the page, you could be registered to win a mask and some other cool swag. And a few people entered the contest. A few people shared. And for you people that did, I want to thank you so much for sharing that. And I said I would announce the winner on today's show, and the winner is Dave Hawley. Congratulations. Dave Hawley is also a former guest of the show and a big supporter of The Art of Bombing, and I did a random name picker, and he won. So there you go. There you have it. He gets the mask and some other cool swag. So I'll be in contact with Dave to get his address and mail that out to him. Another contest that we are starting is in the spirit of March Madness. We're going to be doing the March Bombness, where we're in the search for the worst bombing story. So all you got to do for that... I spaced out there. Sorry about that. So yeah, so what we're doing is looking for the worst bomb out there. In a perfect world, I would be able to have every comic come on the show and talk about their worst bombing story. Fortunately, I don't have the time to do that. There's only 52 weeks in a year, and there are way more comics than that. I could probably do an episode every day if I try to get every comedian's story on here, but I don't have the time for that or the money. So what we're going to do is we're doing this contest, and you can find all the details at artofbombingpod.com/contest. And basically, as long as you haven't been a guest on the show, you're eligible for this contest. And we're going to do face-off style. So I'm taking submissions now. Then beginning in March, we're going to have I'm going to share these stories, and they're going to face off. And you, the listeners, will be voting for the ones that you think should advance until finally we have the ultimate bombing story. And then that person that wins is going to get a $50 gift card, and they're going to be a guest on the show to talk about that bomb. So that'll be a cool thing that's coming up in 2021. But submissions are open. People can start submitting their bombing stories now. And again, to do that, just go to artofbombingpod.com/contest. All right. I got a couple virtual shows coming up as well on Wednesday, March. I've got March Madness in my head now. On Wednesday, December 30th, I'm going to be part of the Holidays and Confused show, where it's a storytelling show, and we're going to be telling stories about getting a little schlobbered on the holidays. I have a great story that I'll be sharing, and you can get tickets for that at eventbrite.com. And then on New Year's Eve, I am doing a Blitzed Entertainment New Year's Eve show with some comics from across the country, some great comics. We've got Aaron Tracy, who just won the San Diego Comedy Festival contest. We have Neil Singh, who took second place. We have Jesse Egan, who's been on Dry Bar Comedy. We have Sean McBride, who's been on he's been on ESPN, among many other things. And Brooke Barcel, who is all over the internet right now in the virtual world. And she's actually going to be a guest on the podcast coming up in a week or so. We've already recorded, and I just got to edit the episode. So it's going to be a fun show. Tickets are only $10. You can go get them at danbublitz.com/tickets. And I think that is all I've got, other than, you know, if you haven't done so already, make sure you hit the subscribe button, share the podcast with a friend. If you know somebody that's an aspiring comedian or a hardcore comedy fan, let them know about the podcast. I'm sure they will enjoy this podcast. If you would be so kind, leave us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can do that on Apple Podcast or Podchaser. I think those are the two places where you can actually leave reviews. And with that, let's get into this episode. For everything else Art of Bombing, go to artofbombingpod.com. You can get merch, you can join the Patreon, you can support the show financially through donations if you want. There's blogs, there's everything. And with that, let's get into this episode with Dennis Tooley. Enjoy.
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
So finally, the lady comes to the holding cell and says, "The doctor will now see you," which is another big fat lie because he's not even in the building. He's still playing the back nine. So they finally, she says, "Come back to the doctor's office." That's not an office. There's not a fax machine. There's not a computer. All there is what she calls the table. Have a seat on the table. How many of y'all get to sit on the table at home? Anybody? We weren't even allowed to put our elbows on the table. Have a seat on the table. It's not a table. It's a very uncomfortable bench at best. You know the one I'm talking about. It's the one with the big piece of toilet paper stretched across the top of it. Oh, they say that that's on there so they can clean up all sanitary like when you leave. That's another big fat lie. The reason they want you to sit on the table is so they can get an imprint of your backside. And as soon as you leave, they're taking that bad boy out and putting it up on the x-ray lights. Hey, everybody, come on in. Look, Tooley was just here. That boy's got a big bahoochie, don't he? My word, that kind of looks like Mount Rushmore, don't it? And when you get your bill and you're paying for paperwork, that's the paperwork you're paying for. So they can make fun of your backside. I hate going to the doctor.
So you said you got you got a meeting to look at some other property, huh? Or something?
Yeah. We've been here a little over a year in this spot, and quite frankly, we've had the idea from day one that this would be a great place to get us established, get the brand moving forward. But eventually, we're probably going to need to have a little bit more space and just a place to grow, because we're locked in this space. Fire marshal code will only let us get up to 99 lives, which translates into about 80 seats.
Oh yeah. Yep.
And so with that, okay, that's a great place for us to start, but that's not where we're going to cap things. We want to keep moving forward. And so we've been looking for a while, and the craziness of COVID has caused a lot of places to lose tenants, and so there's spots that are opening up now that weren't open before this crazy crap, and it's actually going to work out a little bit because it's given us some options of places that provides us with more space. Even if we end up finding a spot that is, and we stay at this 50% capacity, it still gives us more space than we have right now to operate.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Actually, the place we're meeting with today, and I'm hoping this one is the one that works out. If we move into that spot at 50% capacity, we would be equal to full capacity at this at our current location. So we almost almost double the size of our club by doing that, and it'll really allow us to do so much more in terms of the Clean Comedy Festival that we've got planned and coming up. That as soon as we know that it's going to be allowed, we'll get that stuff moving out. And so there's all kinds of stuff that we've got planned, but we needed a little bit bigger space. So,
yep. No, that's good. It's good to see that there's a comedy club that's looking at expansion, because a lot of, like you said, a lot of venues are doing the opposite. They're shutting down, you know, because of the, you know, you got this capacity caps and stuff going on right now. And but hopefully too, with the vaccine, hopefully that helps.
And anybody that knows me very long knows that I don't operate out of a mindset of fear. And when anything like this happens, I'm a diehard capitalist. And if there's an opportunity for me to expand and make a better amount of money, I'm going to find a way to make it happen. And so let's move forward. And I'm not looking to downsize. I'm not looking to go backwards. It's onward and upward. And so, I feel bad for the businesses that are struggling and the clubs that are closing. But at the same time, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, this is an opportunity. This is not a death chant or whatever to send us with our tails tucked between our legs. This is a time for us to look at, okay, how can we prepare to thrive in the midst of this, or as soon as this thing's done, let's go onward and upward. So, and that's just that's always been my business mentality. So,
Well, sometimes it's a good business mentality to have. I mean, to look, you know, like I said, upward and onward. I mean, that's the only way a business can succeed. And it, definitely with everything going on with, you know, the pandemic, it's definitely putting a hamper on people trying to do that, you know, and it varies state to state. I don't know how it is where you guys are, you know, but I know every state has handled things differently with, you know, regulations and, you know, for capacity and this and that. Like right now in Minnesota, everything's pretty much shut down where I'm at now
we shut
down for that's, another 4 weeks.
And that's the thing. When we opened here, we're actually in Greenwood, Indiana, which is on the south side of Indianapolis, the next county out of Indianapolis. Indianapolis proper, that county has such a high rate of new cases that they've pretty much shut everything down. And because we're in the next county over, we don't have the number of cases and everything. We're still in they've got this color code, which I didn't pay attention to my colors when I was in kindergarten, so I'm always like, what part of the color wheel are we in? And is this a package of 62 or just 22? I don't know. We're in orange, and which I like orange better than red anyway, so I'm like, let's just stay there. But we can operate at 50% here. And so as long as the numbers don't climb here in this county, then we can stay at that number. And until they actually have the vaccines out and people are lining up to take the first test run and all that, I'm going to treat the vaccines kind of like I do an update on my software for my computer. I usually wait about 3, 4, 5 months before I update mine because I want to hear all the stories of people. I updated and it crashed and oh my God, you know.
Wait for all the bugs to get fixed.
Yeah. You work out all the details and get us to the place where we know really what to expect from this thing. I might line up for it then, but by that time it'll be over. And most of it will be going away and I'll be like, I'm okay with it then.
Yeah.
Although I honestly, I have not gone and tested for the antibodies, you know, to see if I've already had it. But I kind of think I might have at the early days.
Yep.
Because I had an event in Portland and then went from Portland to San Francisco, San Francisco back to Indianapolis. And that flight from San Francisco to Indianapolis, there was a group, I don't know, 30, 40 people on that flight, plus a bunch of kids that just flew in from China.
Mm-hmm.
And were coming to Indianapolis. And I got home and I had this nasty cough and fever. And, you know, at that point, the doctor's like, it's probably a virus. It'll run its course. You know, you don't need any medication. And sure enough, you know, I didn't feel good for a while, but I have multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. And so I deal with fatigue, which is one of the big symptoms of this virus. So maybe I was fatigued from the virus more than I was from MS, or maybe it was just the MS had taught me how to deal with the fatigue. I don't know, but you know, I might have had it already. I don't know. I'm not going to go down there. Hey, stick that swab up in my brain and find out if I have the antibodies, you know?
Yeah, so. I haven't tested for that either. And I think I might have had it back in February. I got really sick. Same kind of thing. But I haven't checked for the antibodies. But I did just do, you know, we met at the World Series of Comedy. And when I got back from there, I quarantined for 14 days. And then I went and took a test and I tested negative. So far I haven't got it.
Well, that's good. You know?
So yeah, which has been good.
And you know, it was one of those things where I kind of watched because there were a few people that, that I had spent quite a bit of time visiting with at the World Series of Comedy, got back and heard that they had tested positive and they were self quarantining and all that stuff. And I was like, don't know if they, caught it after I left and went home, or did they have it when we were talking? I don't know. And so I've been, you know, a little bit cautious, careful, but like I say, I'm not running scared. I'm not running out of fear because fear doesn't accomplish anything in life.
No, that's very true. Now, so you guys opened up your comedy club, Gutty's Comedy Club, and which is really unique about your comedy club. It's one of the few, if only, I don't know how many. I mean, there's a lot of clubs out there, but you guys primarily just do clean comedy, which is fantastic. I mean, there's a market for clean comedy. Everybody in comedy, you know, for the most part knows clean equals green. I mean, that's
clean is the new green. That's it, you know? So yeah, it's really one of those things. I've been in this game. I've been in the entertainment industry for 35 years. And years ago, I had an opportunity when I was working in radio, I had an opportunity to interview Red Skelton before he died. Mm-hmm. Not after he died, because that'd be creepy interviewing somebody
right?
who just
that
died.
That would be, you know, a little weird.
Red, tell me, how does it feel being dead? No. But I had the opportunity to interview him, and he, every time, you know, he would be on any show, he always had a list of, here's some questions you can feel comfortable asking me, which as a person doing the interviews, I always thought it was kind of funny because it's like, you're too stupid to come up with good questions. So I'm going to give you some really good questions to ask me, you know? But one of the questions, and it was probably one that I probably would have answered anyway, was if you were giving advice to somebody new trying to get into the world of comedy, what would you tell them? And so I asked him the question and he said, I would tell you to always work clean. And what I didn't realize, and people, your generation and younger probably don't know a whole lot about Red Skelton, but he was, you know, TV presence and all that. But before he was on TV, he was in vaudeville, and he was a raunchy, horribly raunchy comedian in vaudeville. And then he got seen and they were like, man, we'd like you to think about doing a TV show with us, but you can't do the stuff you've been doing. You got to clean that up. It's got to be family ready, you know? Yeah. And that was back during a time frame when there were ratings of PG meant that you had crossed too many lines to be seen by the general public, you know? And that, you let alone going R-rated or beyond, you know? They didn't even have an M rating back then. somebody who said, "Hey, you're rated M," I'd be like, "M&M's, all right, let's go." You know,
I'll take a bag of those.
Yeah, so, you got the peanut butter ones. I like those. Yeah, they said you got to clean your stuff up, and so he really had to reinvent himself. And it was one of those things that, you know, it made such good sense. And again, being the capitalist, I'm looking for where can I make the most money doing what I'm going to do. I want to work smarter, not harder. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that there were more opportunities that would open up. And here's the thing. And I teach this when we have Comedy College here, a class that we teach. I don't teach you have to be clean and that's all you have to be. You have to be funny. If you're not funny, if you're not bringing the funny, it doesn't matter if you're clean, dirty, or standing on stage naked. Well, that might be a difference. You might be able to draw a crowd depending on, you know, what you look like naked. Yeah. It's a freak show. Tully's naked on stage. What? No, people don't want to see that. But the reality is, if you can work clean, you can work anywhere.
Yep.
And the thing that I have learned is I could take a set that I do and do it on the stage of any church on a Sunday and turn around on that very next Friday night and do that in a blue room in the most blue comedy club in the country. And I will still be able to get laughs. And I don't necessarily even have to change the set, because I've worked on the craft of making sure it's funny first, making sure it's clean while I'm writing the funny, and those two combined, then I don't have to change anything. I can go anywhere. And that's pretty much how, you know, I spent 25 years making money in corporate America, doing corporate gigs and cruise gigs. And if I'm going to keep making money, I can fight for the opportunity to make a corporate gig, or I could fight for that club that's going to pay a fraction of what the corporate gig's going to pay. I might as well fight for the corporate gigs and let somebody else fight for that club gig. So I'll stay out of your way at the clubs. Just stay out of my way at the corporate gigs. I'm just kidding. Come alongside. There's a lot of room there, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. But yeah, I totally agree. And that's something I learned, fortunately, learned early on, was to work clean. And even though I don't always work clean, it's in my toolbox, you know. And now, in the last couple of years, I'm kind of being forced to work clean, just in the fact that I'm getting labeled as a clean comedian. Like, I didn't label myself clean comedian. Like I said, I learned that it was more about being funny and, you know, using profanity and things like that in a set. Sure, a well-placed profanity can really help a joke be funny, but more times than not, a profanity is just a crutch, you know.
My general rule is this. If your joke isn't funny without profanity, you really haven't finished your job in terms of writing and digging for the comedy gold. If using profanity enhances the laugh, you have a good laugh going, and then a perfectly placed word, profane word, whatever, enhances, takes the laughter to a higher level. Okay. It serves a purpose. It's not being done out of laziness and out of loss of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
If you really work hard on your craft, you write funny, and then anything you do with language is just to take and enhance it from there. It's to give it a bigger laugh, or it's to sustain the laugh past the initial laugh. Mm-hmm. And so, no need to rely on a crutch when you haven't done the work to put legs under it.
Yep, that makes sense. That's makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Well, and like I said, with clean comedy, I was taught that, but, you know, I just do more and more clean comedy, and that's what people are getting to know me for. And I'm fine with it because, you know, I do corporate stuff, and I just got to do dry bar. And one thing with, you know, dry bar comedy is a good example of how people want family friendly comedy. I mean, you look at all the content that they put out, and they get millions and millions and millions of views because, you know, there's a market for it. So
exactly. That, you know, Andy Beningo, good friend of mine who's been on dry bar. You know, I've always said Andy's got the, you know, he's got it, whatever it is in comedy. He's got it. And I've said, I'm going to watch and see how high his cart flies here because, you know, he's got it. His dry bar set, over millions of views on that in a very short time frame. And, and I'm just like, yeah, that's great. And then I started looking at other comics that have been on dry bar either before or after Andy, and to see the numbers of millions of views that more than one comic, almost every one of the comics that they release something with goes up to or over the million mark pretty quickly, just because they have this niche that people are hungry for good, clean comedy where they don't have to, if they're watching it, they don't have to worry if the kid comes in and stands there and watches it with them. They don't have to explain to their wife why they just were laughing at something, you know, it was a commercial. It was a commercial, honey. I promise. You know, and so, you know, it's really is comedy for everyone, you know, and again, I say this to comics all the time. My own son left college, said, "Dad, I'm dropping out of college." I'm like, "Oh, really? What are you going to do?" He said, "I want to become a comedian." And I was like, "Oh, the boy wants to follow. Oh, my God, he wants to follow in my footsteps. Oh, no." But, you know, he moved out and went to Portland because he wanted to stand on his own. And he told me early on, he said, "Pops, I'm probably not going to be your style of comedian." I was like, "As long as you're funny, I don't care. If you ain't funny, we're going to have a conversation because you're not going to go out there saying you're funny and take down the name because I've been spending so many years building a name." And so he's like, "Yeah, I'm not going to work clean." And I said, "Okay, you don't have to work clean. If you don't want to make money, I don't care." The reality is, I don't care if you're not working clean, as long as you are funny, and as long as you are putting in the work to make sure it's funny on its own without language, without, you know, profanities or innuendos, and just be funny. And then you can take it to another level. I don't care how you take it, where you take it, as long as it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. That's funny is funny. Now let's get into the art of bombing. You've been doing comedy for a long time, so I'm sure you got plenty of stories of some bad shows or some hard bombs. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you got.
Yeah. So I gotta tell you, I appreciate the fact, you know, hey, we just met and I can already tell you suck. I'm sure the short time I've known you, I know you have bombed a lot. Thanks for your vote of confidence there, Dan. I appreciate that.
To be fair, you got to see me bomb at the World Series of Comedy. So,
I don't think I saw you bomb.
I felt like I did on that second show.
I was going to say you may have had a better set, but I don't think I saw you bomb. I did see a couple of people really just dive knee deep into the crap pit during that time, and I felt bad because I know that they had good sets in order to get on the stage at World Series of Comedy. But in that moment, let's be honest, the rooms, we were in the same, the LA Comedy Club at the Stratosphere in Las Vegas, fantastic club. But because they were doing two and three shows a night, it was a different, completely different feel for every show.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
If, for instance, if you were on the 6 o'clock show, and you felt like, oh, I bombed, you could have done the exact same thing without changing anything at the 8 o'clock show. And you would have walked out there going, "Man, I rock. Yes."
Yeah, or that's a good point.
You could have been on that 8 o'clock show, I rock, and then go back in and do the same thing at the 10 o'clock show, and you'd have been like, man, somebody please just give me a colonoscopy. please, you know, because that's how quickly the room changed and the temperature changed in each of those rooms. But there were some of those comics that really – They jumped in and the audience was like, nah, I'm not going with you. You go ahead, take that journey without me. I'm staying out of that. You know, I'm not
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I've seen that happen too because I've helped produce other festivals. And, you know, you like say you have to have a good video to get in to a festival. And then you get to the festival and it just goes bad, you know. And then it feels bad too, because on the other side of that, there's comics that are super funny all the time and just don't have a good video.
There was a festival back in the early 90s. I don't remember. It was probably, I think it was around till about 95, 96, I think, that I discovered because I was like, you know, I don't have anything going on. Let me see if I can get on that festival. I might pick up some new corporate gigs out of it. I don't know. And I remember it was about halfway through the thing. And I noticed that there were comics that were showing up on the stage that weren't on any of the roster of comics that were supposed to be there. And I realized that, and Kenny, Dickerson, I think was his last name. The guy that ran that, they folded under probably before 2000 even. But he would actually invite comics that were that he had seen at an open mic that were horrible. They had no material. They were just, you know, it was those guys that you see at an open mic every once in a while. They get up there and they go, oh, so my friend said I'm funny, so I'm going to come up and tell you some stories. Yeah. I was out drinking with my buddies. Oh, come on, people, that's funny. Come on, you know, it was that kind of thing where they have absolutely nothing, but because they got dared to or whatever, they're just you'd rather watch paint peel than to ever watch them again. And this guy Kenny, he was getting them to come to the early part of the festival to really kind of set the stage for man, if you don't bring the goods, you're going to be booed off and voted off the stage right away, you know, and he would publicly dismiss these people that were just horrible to kind of set the stage that we're this is about serious, we're weird about me. And I was like, yeah, it's one thing if you don't know what's going on, you know, the average audience would be like, wow, man, you guys better bring the goods, otherwise you're out of here too, you know. Most of the comics were like, well, at least we got rid of the riffraff that Kenny brought in to show the audience that he's serious, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, it's you get those moments where you have comics that really they came there, they had material, but they just didn't hit. I've had moments like that. I tell you the one show that haunts me. There aren't many that I will be honest. I've had plenty of opportunities to go, yeah, I should just shoot myself and die. Should never do this again, you know. But the reality is that's not my mentality. My mentality is okay. I didn't do enough work there. I've got to do better next time. Mm-hmm. And I always, every time I have had a horrible show, I've never really looked at it as a bomb blowing up my career. I looked at it as, okay, here's this learning opportunity for me to get better. And so, you know, early on I had somebody, you know, tell me record every set that you do. This was even before phones, I had a micro recorder. And for those of you who are watching that are listening, micro recorder, it had a micro cassette tape.
Google it. I remember those.
Google it, kids. Okay. And I would record every set, and then I'd go back and listen and evaluate and figure out how to make something better and improve it. And I would recommend that to everybody. If you're just getting up and you hit record on your phone and it's in your pocket, okay, record it. So you get, you know, to go back. Now there's a lot of people, they're like, well, I want to get video of everything. I don't necessarily want video of what I'm doing until I have worked out the verbiage of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Once I get it set with, okay, I'm really happy with the pace and the flow of the joke, and I know that I've got the words in the right spot and everything, I'm ready to move on. Then I'll video it because I want to see what I'm doing with facial expressions and act outs and movement, and I want to kind of enhance that as well. But I digress, because I'm an old guy. I do that. but the one show that haunts me, though, I was asked to perform for the 101st Airborne when they came back from Afghanistan. And it was a huge honor because I come from a military family. And just to be asked to perform there, I was like, man, this is a great honor. And so I took the gig. I should have done a little bit more homework about what the gig was and what to expect the gig was, because I found out that it was a general's ball. And even though we've talked about clean comedy, I'll just let you know, most generals do have balls. every time they come back, it's a big party. They always throw balls. I digress again. but the whole thing was really to celebrate the fact that they came back. And in that particular instance, there was no life loss for the 101st when they were over serving and doing that part, their part in Afghanistan. They came back as a unit that the same unit that left came back, and everything was great. And so they throw a big party, they celebrate. And I'm like, okay, this is so cool to be part of this. But then it didn't take me long to realize that the soldiers and their spouses and everybody, they were there to party because they were back home.
Yeah.
And they were waiting for the general to say, okay, the bar is open. You know, after that, it didn't matter what was said, what was done, you know? And I remember, I got up and I started in and, got some, I, you know, one of these guys, and I always preach it, make sure you hit hard with a really good laugh to start out with, so that then they want to go on the journey with you just for the rest of the show. I hit with a really good laugh, and everybody was having a great time. Got to about my third bit in the show, and they were already done. They're like, okay, that was funny. Now we want to party. Get off the stage so we can party. You know, and there was this woman, one of the a wife or a girlfriend or somebody of one of the soldiers, comes walking up to the stage and says, "Oh, can I have the mic for a minute?" And I was like, I suppose, you know, mostly because I was afraid to say no, because she came with people who know how to use guns. And so I was like, yeah, I suppose. She took the mic, pulled it off the cord, and walked away with it.
Oh, my goodness.
I was like, well, all right.
I think now, that might have been the first time I've ever heard that ever happening.
And so I was like, okay, in my brain real quick, I'm thinking, okay, what do I do now? What do I do now? Well, after I was supposed to do my set, they were going to have dancing. The microphone wasn't mine. The microphone was the DJ's, who was going to be doing the dancing piece afterwards. Well, he walks out and gives me another microphone. And as he hands it to me, he's like, don't give this one away. Like, no, I've learned my lesson there. I'm not doing that again. And so, yeah, I was like, no, you, I'll keep this one. But yeah, it was very clear at that point that, the only people listening from that point on were, the general and the upper officers that were at a very select table up front. And there was probably in that group, there was maybe 30 out of the 1,200 people were right at that upper front table.
Yeah.
They were the only ones. So literally, I did a private show for them, and the rest of the room was talking and drinking, and it was chaos. Yeah. And I was
that
just
always
like,
makes it hard too to perform, even when you have a small group that's paying attention. But when you but if it's a small group within a large group, and that large group is not into it, you know, it makes it tough to even perform for that small group. You know, and especially you feel bad too, because if that group's enjoying it, you know, they're also getting annoyed probably by all the people that are being obnoxious.
Yeah. And, you know, it was one of those things that afterwards I left and I said to myself, I said, you know, the capitalist in me is mad because I was honored to be asked to serve, you know, to come and do the show for these troops because they had just come back from putting their life in danger in Afghanistan. And because I grew up with a family that was very military oriented and everything, I said, you know what? I'm going to come do it. If you guys, you know, if you got an arrangement with the hotel there that isn't going to cost you cost you guys the money, I'm going to come. I'm going to do the show. It's going to be my gift to the troops because I can't do anything for them. And then that happened, and I went back to the hotel room, and I was sitting in the hotel room going, man, you know, none of them would care if I got paid what I should have gotten paid because it's not coming out of their pockets. And the government is going to spend that money on something stupid anyway. They might as well have given it to me because, you know, at least I'm a nice stupid. and so I was a little bit mad at myself for being swept up in the moment of the honor and all of that. I still regret not only the fact that I had something happen that I did not know how to deal. I mean, most of the time somebody heckles or gets involved in the show, I can sidestep and tap dance around it. That one, I was just literally, I was so dumbfounded. As I watched the microphone walk away, I was just like, I don't know what to do, you know.
I think anybody in that situation probably would have been like, it would have been so dumbfounded by that, because that's not something, like, I've seen situations happen where somebody will get up on stage and the comic will, like, let them, you know, they'll give them the mic and then they'll try to be funny or whatever, and it still goes horrible. But I don't think I've ever heard or seen somebody come up and just peep, take the mic and then walk away.
She was so polite. Excuse me, could I have the mic for just a moment? Yes, ma'am, you can. Thanks. Boom. Off she walked. I was just like, whoa, you know.
And then those situations too, because you don't know, like, when you're doing like corporate and like fundraising type things like that, like, they could literally just be trying to make an announcement. So, you know, you're like trying to work with them. You're like, oh, okay, you need to make an announcement right now. All right, whatever, I guess.
Oh yeah, you forgot you were supposed to do something before I got up here. You better take care of it so you don't forget. I understand. Okay. Here's the mic. Boom. And yeah.
There's a way they go.
that one still haunts me, you know. And I got another one that it doesn't haunt me as much as it's a great story that I tell from time to time. I was doing a Christmas party for this huge trucking company in Illinois, up in the Chicago area, and I have it in my contract that as long as there isn't an open bar, I will guarantee the quality of my show. If there's an open bar, it's all bets off, because at that point, you know, drunk people, you don't know what to expect.
That's actually a really good clause. I never thought of that, but that is actually really good.
And so I got up here to the show, and there again, it's a Christmas party, and I know what to expect anytime you're going into a Christmas party, especially knowing that it was a trucking company. I'm like, pretty sure those boys know how to drink, you know? And so right before they bring me up, the owner of the company is like, again, you know, I want to thank you guys for being here. This has been a great year. And I just checked. We haven't even used close to half of the drink budget. So you guys, the bar is going to stay open the whole time the comedian's up here. So drink up, people. You know, you got the hotel rooms. You don't have to drive. You don't have to go anywhere. So drink up. Now, here's the comic. And I'm like,
oh, man.
Well, evidently, you don't care for the guarantee then. I'll go ahead. And so I get up. And early on in the show like that, I do a little bit of crowd work where I've got some stuff I do about I've got a whole segment of material that I do about mascots for our sports teams. You know, the mascot's supposed to strike the fear of God into the opponent. And there's some of these schools, they don't get it. Oh, you're from one of those areas too. The South Dakota State Jackrabbits. Oh my God, kids, it's the fluffy bunnies. Quick, circle the wagons. We got to protect ourselves. Oh my God, run. You know. So anyway, I was getting ready to do this bit. And so I do a little crowd work, you know. What high school did you go to? What was your mascot? You know, oh, okay, that's pretty, you know. And then I go over here and I talk with, and then I jump into the mascot stuff, right? Well, as I was doing that, one of the guys jumps in and kind of dogs one of the other guys because he went to a cross town rival school and they started talking trash to each other about their mascots. And I was like, okay, do I let this go? Do I stop? I'm going to let it go for a little bit. Let's have some fun. So I'm egging them on a little bit, you know, and then one of these guys' wives or girlfriend stands up and she gets mad at me for letting this happen. Like it was my fault, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, we got to do something about this soon, you know? And before I could, this other guy's wife or girlfriend jumps up and she starts throwing, you know, across at that woman. Well, why don't you just shut up and sit down? You blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, oh man, this is getting ugly. I better grab it and make something out of this. And before I can, the one guy says to the other guy, hey, you need to control your woman. The woman was like, he doesn't need to control me. And she just went all crazy cat on this guy, just clawing and scratching. And I was like, oh my God. And that show, I was maybe 20 minutes into a 45 to 60 minute set, and it was done. And I was like, yeah, there's nothing for me to do now. I've done my duty. You guys go ahead and fight and have the cops called. I'm out of here. And I will say that was one time that I was completely happy that I had that clause in my contract, because I was like, dude, you started it. You said, yeah, the bar's open. You keep drinking. It's your fault. You pay me, you know? That's one of those that it's one of those stories that I still, just the way it all happened, watching it happen. I play it back in my mind, almost like it's in slow motion. Oh, I don't need to be controlled. Wow. You know, it's just crazy.
That's funny. Oh man. Now you touched a little bit about recording sets and things like that, you know, and, you know, going back, what do you do? What do you look for to analyze a set? Like, how do you break it down to try to figure out, you know, if a set went bad or a joke went bad, what do you try to do?
I go back and I listen to the recording, at least three times. The first time I listen to it, I'm listening to exactly what I say. And is it like I intend? Did I say it like I intended to? Did I keep the verbiage in the format and the flow that I wanted to? Because when I go work on material at an open mic or something, I will try it out with different phrases, different things. And so I want to go back and listen. Did I do it? Did I perform what I had written? Did I perform it properly? If not, then I need to work on that. I need to really get the flow of the verbiage down. then I go back and listen to it again and ask, is my pacing engaging the audience? Am I getting laughter when I believe I should be getting laughter? Because a lot of times, you know, we have it in our own minds, this is funny and this is going to get a great laugh. And it's not always that it's not getting the laugh that it's supposed to, maybe because we rushed it. Maybe the pacing was just a little too fast. Maybe we went a little too slow. We let them have a little too much time to go imagine their own punchline, you know. Mm-hmm. So I go back and I listen for that, for the pacing side of things. Am I really engaging the audience? And then that third time I'm looking to go, okay, what did the audience get? Where was the audience really enjoying and laughing this in this bit? And looking for is there something that I can do to enhance that moving forward? Is there something I can do to make that better? So I'm looking at different levels of the material, the pacing of the material, the delivery, and then the response from the audience on it, you know. So mm-hmm. I listen to it at least three times afterwards. I never listen to it the same night as the show because I don't want the emotion of the show to dictate how I feel about what I'm going to listen to. So I wait to at least 24 hours before I listen to the and evaluate and start looking at making any improvements, any changes, that kind of stuff. There are a couple of people that from time to time, particularly if I'm working on a brand new bit, like I'm doing a whole new set right now because, when we met at the World Series, you know that because of the MS, my legs have been giving me a lot of fits. And so most of the time you saw me, I was in a wheelchair there. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming more of a permanent thing for me. I can get around short distances with a cane or with my walker, but for the most part, I'm in a wheelchair. And so I'm writing a whole new set. I'm putting together a whole new show that's going to be titled Taking Stand Up to a Whole New Low. it's either that or I'm going to take Stand Up Sitting Down. One of the two. I haven't decided on the actual title of the track. But so with that particular set that I'm working on stuff, I'm taking it out and I'm trying the stuff out in different ways. A lot of times when I'm trying new material, I'll take it and I'll do it in a show that I'm doing and I'll just sandwich it in between bits that I know are solid that I don't have to worry about. I'll have it's basically a new joke sandwich, you know. And it gives me an opportunity to see what it's doing and how it feels in a live setting. But then I'll also take it to workshop it a little bit at an open mic at a pro-am or something. Once I kind of have working on a little bit, then I might take it and say to, I've got a couple of guys that I've done some writing stuff with in the past. And I'll say, hey, take a listen to this and I'll send them the recordings. Take a listen to this and tell me what you think and what I should be doing to punch things up a little bit. And I'll get some input from some of those guys that I trust. And I know that they know my voice enough to know where my mind is sort of going. So they're not going to say, oh, you should do it this way. And because however they might do it is not any way that I would do it. So they know that, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's when I listen to when I take the recording and actually use it to get an outside perspective more than just my own evaluation of what I think it should be and what I think I should have done or shouldn't have done. You know,
yeah,
that's pretty much my routine.
That's really good. I think that really does help if you have people that you can not necessarily write with, but get feedback from that know you well enough to be able to give you constructive feedback in your voice, you know, because everybody, you can send it to anybody and they'd be like, well, you should try it like this. And you're right. What might work for me isn't necessarily going to work, you know, for you. So
and
that's all good.
I get comics. Like I've met a lot of guys at the World Series of Comedy and I've at other festivals I've gone to, I meet people and I say to them, if I can be helpful, if you want to send me your bit, you know, I'll give you ideas. But because I don't necessarily know and really hear your voice, I'm going to send you ideas. Have you thought about this? Have you tried it this way? That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Have you thought about this as a tag? Have you, you know, that kind of stuff.
You gave me a great tag that I should have already had in my set. I can't believe I didn't think of it. That was like...
and that's honestly, that's where when I'm working on stuff, I don't necessarily look for comics to validate me. Oh, that was so funny. You're just, I don't, what, when I'm doing that, a lot of times, I'm listening to the comics as they're talking about, hey, I really like when you did this. It made me think. And then I want to know what they thought, because many times what they thought opens up a whole new train of thought to adding tags or taking the joke to a different place. And so, you know, I always listen, no matter how young or old the comic is. They may have been in the game 2 days. I'm still going to listen, you know.
Yeah.
I don't take their advice and just automatically plug it in. but at the same time, I don't do that from people that have been in the game longer than I have. You know, I don't just automatically take and go, oh, well, if Dennis Regan said I should do it this way, then I should do it this way, you know.
Yeah.
And I did say to him one day, we were talking, and I said, you know, I'm going to use one of your ideas in my next show as soon as I know that you have taken one of my ideas in your next show. and he kind of laughed at me. He says, well, at least we both have dreams of using some new material. And I was like, yep, that's pretty much good. We're going to leave it like that. So.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right. Well, I got a few more things for you. I know we're getting down to the wire here for time for you. But, when you have a joke that doesn't work, or it's you feel like you're kind of things are going sideways when you're on stage, what goes through your mind?
Well, there are times when a joke should never not work on a show. I'm not bringing any material to a show that I haven't tested out enough, and I haven't worked up, really gone through the process of editing and re-editing and kind of working on the word economy of it and getting it to the place where I feel like there's gold there. So at an open mic, though, you know, I may hit it. And again, I'm not listening necessarily for the comics to laugh, but I'm listening for how I feel. Is the flow of it right? Am I getting the wording right? That kind of stuff. So by the time I get to where I'm putting it in a new joke sandwich, I feel like it's that there's something there already. Mm-hmm. Okay. If that happens, and I have had it happen where I bring it out and either I brought it out too soon, I didn't pace it right, I did something wrong in the delivery of it. Occasionally it has happened where I've tried it in a joke sandwich at a couple different places, and every time I go back and I go, wow, maybe that's not as funny as I thought it was, you know? And that's probably the hardest thing as a comic, is to realize, okay, I think this is hilarious. Why doesn't everybody else?
Yeah.
But being honest with it, saying, okay, if we think about it as comics, our job is not to get laughs. Our job is to give away laughter. Our job is for the audience. And if we do our job properly, we give them something that gives them an opportunity to laugh. And if what we're giving them doesn't let them laugh, then we need to go back and come up with something that we can give them that will bring the laugh. Okay?
Yep.
And so in that moment, A lot of times I'm looking at, okay, what do I need to change in this, or do I need to let this go and come back to it some other time and put it in a different format, a different way, or whatever, because what I brought wasn't what the audience needed or wanted. Now I need to go find what is it the audience will need and want, and if I can find something in that joke and turn it into something some other way, then I'm okay with it.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at what you said. What you said was beautiful, but somebody walked behind you.
That was my business partner. That was my business partner.
And he,
partner.
Like, tried to duck.
Yeah, well.
It cracked me up.
he wasn't ducking. He was just dancing. That's He's Puerto Rican. He dances everywhere he goes. So, no. Actually, he was probably coming out saying, hey, old man, you know, we got to go.
Yeah,
we'll get to this meeting, so.
One quick thing. Do you have a song that gets you pumped up?
A song that gets me pumped up? Yep. No, not really. Yeah. I guess probably my new song, though, because I'm spending so much time in the wheelchair now, is They See Me Rolling. I don't know. It's either that or I Got Friends Who Roll Places. Maybe not. I don't know. Anyway.
I like it. All right. Where can people find you? You got – go ahead and plug your stuff. Yeah.
Check out GuttysComedyClub.com. That's going to get you an opportunity because if you go to GuttysComedyClub.com, you're going to see all the comics that are coming up, and we live broadcast all of our shows. So even if you're in no man's land up there in South Dakota or Minnesota in the frozen tundra, and you're like, oh, I'm stuck in the snow and quarantine because we can't go anywhere, can't do anything. Well, you could at least get online and watch a Gutty's show. Go to GuttysComedyClub.com/live. On Friday or Saturday night, catch a great show. GuttysComedyClub.com is probably the best place. If you check out Dennis Tooley or Funny D Tooley on Facebook or YouTube or Instagram or any of those socialized media things, we'll do. You can check out and see what I'm doing, and for the most part, there's funnier people to watch. And so if you want, you can, send me a message and I'll tell you, hey, you should check out this kid from Minnesota, from South Dakota, Minnesota. I don't know. You're confusing to me where you live and where you're from, but,
I live in Minnesota. I'm from South Dakota.
check out the kid from Urine, South Dakota.
Yeah.
And,
there you go.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time and doing this. This has been fantastic.
Hey, keep them laughing, man.
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.